Welcome to the Noracast Tech Briefing. I'm Alex.
And I'm Taylor. It's great to be with you today.
We have a really packed agenda today. The big news is that OpenAI has officially unveiled GPT 5.6, and it's not just a single model, it's a whole family with a completely new tiered structure and some fascinating government coordination behind the scenes.
That's right. We're also going to follow up on a story we previewed yesterday. The European Parliament has held their crucial vote on the Chat Control 1.0 derogation. The results are in, and the procedural mechanics that led to this outcome are honestly pretty wild.
It really was a dramatic vote. And later in our roundup, we'll look at a massive win for the right to repair movement involving John Deere and the FTC, plus a minimalist word game that's taking Hacker News by storm.
Lots of ground to cover. Let's dive into the OpenAI announcement. So, OpenAI has officially launched the GPT 5.6 family of models as of July 9, 2026. And the word family is doing a lot of heavy lifting here because they didn't just drop one massive foundation model. They released three distinct variants: Sol, which is their new flagship, Terra, positioned as the balanced option, and Luna, the cost-efficient tier. This feels like a very deliberate maturation of their product line. We've seen them play with different sizes before, but formalizing it into Sol, Terra, and Luna right at launch shows they are directly targeting enterprise cost efficiency. They want to give developers the exact right tool for the job, rather than forcing everyone to use the most expensive, compute-heavy model for simple tasks.
Exactly. And the token efficiency numbers they're quoting are significant. OpenAI is reporting 14 to 38% reductions in token usage specifically for legal and coding workflows. If you're an enterprise running millions of tokens a day through a coding assistant or processing massive legal contracts, a 38% reduction in token usage translates directly to massive cost savings.
It also translates to lower latency. Fewer tokens in and out means faster response times. But the capability that really caught my eye is on the flagship model, Sol. It includes a new ultra setting that coordinates multiple agents across parallel work streams for complex tasks. We've been talking about agentic workflows for over a year, but having that orchestration built natively into the flagship model is a big step. It implies the model isn't just generating text, it's managing subtasks, delegating, and synthesizing results.
Right. You give it a high-level goal, and it spins up the necessary parallel threads. But what's equally fascinating, and maybe more controversial, is how this launch was handled behind the scenes. Access to GPT 5.6 was initially restricted to a limited preview for trusted partners starting back on June 26, 2026. And that was done following direct coordination with the U.S. government regarding safety and security risks.
This is a huge shift. We've moved from the era of moving fast and breaking things to a highly structured, government-coordinated rollout. They are specifically citing concerns over the potential misuse of frontier models in cybersecurity and biological research. We've talked in this show about AI fuzzing and zero-day exploits being generated by these models, so the government's interest is well-founded.
Absolutely. Just a week ago, we covered that massive drop of undisclosed zero-day exploits on GitHub that were reportedly found using automated AI fuzzing. The US government is clearly watching this space closely. But this gated release sets a new precedent. It raises the question, is the traditional open release model for frontier AI dead? Are we going to see this level of federal oversight for every major model launch going forward?
I think for models at this capability tier, yes. When you have an ultra setting that can coordinate multiple agents, the potential for automated, parallelized cyber attacks or complex social engineering campaigns is real. The government coordination is a way to ensure that the safety and security guardrails are robust before it hits the open internet. But it does create a dynamic where the biggest players are forming an even tighter relationship with regulators, which can inadvertently create a regulatory moat that smaller, open-weight competitors can't easily cross.
That's a great point. If regulatory compliance and pre-release government coordination become the de facto standard for frontier models, it's going to be very hard for open-source initiatives to keep up. Though, as we saw with Alibaba's QN models and the GLM 5.2 release we discussed recently, the OpenAI community is still pushing the envelope hard.
They are, but the gap in pure reasoning and agentic orchestration might widen if companies like OpenAI have access to proprietary safety frameworks developed in tandem with national security agencies. Looking back at the three tiers, Sol, Terra, and Luna, do you think this effectively solves the enterprise dilemma of balancing capability with cost?
I think it's the right approach. Developers have been asking for this. You don't need Sol's multi-agent ultra setting to parse a simple JSON file or draft a standard email. Luna will likely handle that perfectly well at a fraction of the cost. The 14 to 38% token reduction, combined with tiered pricing, means companies can build much more complex applications without bankrupting their API budgets.
It'll be interesting to see how developers adopt the ultra setting on Sol. Parallel workstreams sound great on paper, but managing the state and ensuring the sub-agents don't hallucinate or get stuck in loops is a notoriously difficult problem. If OpenAI has solved that natively within the model architecture, GPT 5.6 is going to be a massive leap forward.
And we should also consider the broader implications of that 14 to 38% token reduction. That's not just a cost saving. It represents a fundamental improvement in how the model encodes and processes information, particularly in highly structured domains like law and software engineering. We've seen models struggle with context windows filling up too quickly when dealing with dense, specialized jargon. If GPT 5.6 can compress that representation more efficiently, it means you can fit significantly more actual context into the same window.
Exactly. If you're analyzing a massive code base, a 38% reduction in token usage means you can pull in 38% more files for the model to reference before you hit the context limit. That directly translates to better, more accurate code generation because the model has a wider view of the system architecture. It's a huge win for developers.
And it'll be fascinating to see how the open source community reacts. We've seen models like Qwen 3.627b become the sweet spot for local development, but OpenAI is clearly trying to pull developers back into their ecosystem with these highly optimized, task-specific tiers. The competition is only getting fiercer.
Let's shift gears and follow up on a story we previewed on yesterday's show. We talked about the impending European Parliament vote on the Chat Control 1.0 derogation, which is the temporary legal framework allowing online platforms to voluntarily scan private communications for child sexual abuse material, or CSAM. Well, the vote happened on July 9th, 2026, and the outcome is both highly consequential and procedurally bizarre.
Bizarre is exactly the right word. The Parliament voted to extend this temporary scanning regime until April 3, 2028. But the way they arrived at that extension is causing a massive uproar. To understand what happened, we need to look at the numbers. There were 314 members of the European Parliament who voted against the measure. Only 276 voted in favor.
Right. So a clear majority of the voting MEPs actually opposed the extension.
Exactly. But because of a controversial procedural maneuver, often referred to as an urgent procedure, the rules dictated that the motion to reject the proposal required an absolute majority of all sitting MEPs, which is 361 votes. So even though 314 MEPs voted to reject it, outnumbering the 276 who supported it, they failed to meet that 361 threshold. Therefore, the rejection failed and the extension was adopted.
It's a stunning outcome. You have privacy advocates and civil rights groups absolutely furious, pointing out that the democratic will of the parliament, where the no votes defeated the yes votes by a margin of 38, was essentially overwritten by a procedural technicality. This temporary framework had actually expired back on April 3, 2026, because the parliament rejected a prior extension in March. So it had been dead for 3 months, and now it's been resurrected until 2028 through this absolute majority loophole.
And we should clarify what Chat Control 1.0 actually is, because the terminology gets confusing. This is a temporary, voluntary framework. It permits tech companies to scan user messages for known CSAM, but it does not mandate it. It is entirely distinct from the much broader Chat Control 2.0 legislation that is currently being negotiated, which would seek to establish a permanent, mandatory scanning framework.
That's a crucial distinction. But even as a voluntary measure, the parliament did adopt some key amendments this time around. Specifically, they introduced language intended to exclude end-to-end encrypted services, like WhatsApp and Signal, from this voluntary scanning regime.
Which is a massive point of contention. The core argument from privacy activists is that any form of message scanning, even voluntary client-side scanning, fundamentally breaks the promise of end-to-end encryption. The European Parliament seems to have acknowledged that by trying to carve out encrypted platforms, but critics argue that the very existence of a legal framework for scanning normalizes the practice and paves the way for the mandatory requirements in Chat Control 2.0.
And there's also an ongoing debate about the actual effectiveness of this voluntary scanning. Critics cite data suggesting that these measures frequently fail to stop active abuse and instead generate an overwhelmingly high rate of false positives. You end up with platforms flagging innocent photos, like parents sharing pictures of their kids at the beach with family members, which then clogs up the workflow for law enforcement agencies who have to manually review these flags.
Right. If law enforcement is drowning in false positives, they have fewer resources to dedicate to actual, targeted investigations into abuse networks. It's a classic needle in a haystack problem. And the critics argue that Chat Control 1.0 just adds exponentially more hay without necessarily helping to find the needles.
The tension here is palpable. You have child safety advocates who argue that without these scanning capabilities, platforms become safe havens for horrific abuse. And on the other side, you have cybersecurity experts and privacy advocates who argue that compromising private communications infrastructure creates vulnerabilities that will inevitably be exploited by malicious actors, authoritarian regimes, or hackers.
And this vote really sets the stage for the battle over Chat Control 2.0. If the parliament is this divided over a voluntary, temporary measure, to the point where it only passed because of a procedural threshold despite losing the popular vote on the floor, the negotiations for a permanent, mandatory scanning law are going to be incredibly fraught. The pressure from EU member states to maintain and expand these scanning capabilities is immense, but the internal resistance within the parliament is clearly growing.
It's a precarious situation. The fact that they had to use an urgent procedural maneuver to bypass a previous rejection speaks volumes about the lack of consensus. It undermines the perceived legitimacy of the legislation. When citizens see a measure pass despite the majority of voting representatives opposing it, it breeds cynicism and distrust in the regulatory process.
We'll have to see how the platforms react too. With the new amendments excluding end-to-end encrypted services, companies like Meta and Signal have a bit more clarity, at least until 2028. But the overarching threat of mandatory scanning still looms large over the European tech landscape.
All right, let's hit a few more stories real quick before we wrap up the show.
Sounds good. What do you have first?
We have a massive victory for the right to repair movement. On July 8, 2026, the FTC and attorneys general from five states secured a landmark settlement with Deere & Company, resolving an antitrust lawsuit filed back in January 2025. This is a 10-year agreement that legally requires John Deere to provide farmers and independent repair shops with the exact same diagnostic tools, software, and repair resources that are currently restricted to authorized dealers.
This is huge. For years, farmers have been locked out of fixing their own tractors because of proprietary software, leading to massive delays and costs during critical planting and harvest seasons. The settlement also strictly prohibits Deere from retaliating against customers who choose to do their own repairs. This comes on the heels of a $99 million class action settlement in April, but this FTC order is arguably more important because it forces structural, operational changes for a decade. It sets a massive precedent for other manufacturers in construction and forestry equipment who use similar software lockouts.
Finally, shifting to a lighter note, a project called 18 Words blew up on Hacker News on July 9th, 2026, posted by user PomPomSheep. It's a daily word puzzle game where players have to solve 18 scrambled words before a strict timer runs out. It gained over 450 points and nearly 200 comments in just a few hours.
It's really tapping into that growing nostalgia for the classic web. Clean interfaces, no ads, no subscriptions, and absolutely zero data tracking bloat. The timer mechanic makes it incredibly stressful, kind of a survival challenge, which has sparked a funny debate in the comments between hardcore players and those begging the developer for a timer-free relax mode. It's a great reminder that simple, well-executed, ad-free web apps still have a massive audience who are just tired of modern, engagement-optimized bloatware.
And that is going to do it for today's episode of the NoraCast Tech Briefing.
Thanks for joining us as we unpacked a really busy day in tech and policy.
We will be right back here tomorrow with more of the latest news in AI, quantum, and beyond. Until then, have a great day.